Good afternoon. Today is Monday, March 8th. The time is 1:31 p.m. And what we have today with us, Senator Schauer, I guess, just missed a plane, so he's on his way en route right now. We've got Senator Hughes, who just left to go have a bill. She has a bill before a committee, but we still have a quorum because, thank goodness, Senator Keel is here and Senator Myers is here. So we have enough quorum to do official business. And like you guys know, we turn off cell phones. That's just to avoid embarrassment and disruptions. We have the great Nancy Hemingway with us. We've got Alex with us. And thank heavens, my aide is back. She was gone on a family emergency, as you know, and she's back. Delighted to have her back. So welcome. We have two main things on the agenda today. We have the consideration of the appointees for the Alaska Police Standards Council, which we try to do first, typically when I do appointees, just because I know these guys need to get back to their busy, busy lives. So what we're going to do is we're going to take them in the order of how I have them stapled here. And just so everybody is listening, you just introduce yourself. I think most of you have been through this before, but you introduce who you are, just a little bit about yourself, why you want to be on the council, the Police Standards Council, and then you're available to answer questions. And there's going to be probably a little light on the questions today because a couple of people are missing. So what we're going to do is we're going to start with Ed Mercer of Juneau. So with that, Mr. Mercer, if I think you heard the drill, just state your name, any affiliation, a little bit about yourself, and then if you could stand by for questions, that would be great. Please proceed.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Good afternoon. My name is Ed Mercer. I'm the Chief of Police for the Juneau Police Department. I was born and raised in Sitka, Alaska, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify today to be considered to serve on the Alaska Police Standards Council Board. I've been a law enforcement officer for 28 years, starting my career at the Sitka Police Department back in 1992. I transferred to the Juneau Police Department in 2000. During my tenure at JPD, I have had many opportunities to advance in my career, working my way through the ranks from officer to chief. I've attended thousands of hours of police training during the course of my career that have included basic police procedure, to more advanced supervision management and executive level command school. I hold a Bachelor of Science degree in criminal justice from Herzing University in Madison, Wisconsin, and I'm a graduate at the FBI National Academy. I currently serve on the following boards, Alaska Association Chiefs of Police. I have served on this Alaska Police Standards Council Board. I'm currently on the FBI Criminal Justice Information System Northwest Group and also on the Alaska High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area Board. In my local jurisdiction, I've served on our Juneau Local Emergency Planning Committee and our local homeless task force. So the reason I want to serve on the Alaska Police Standards Council is I believe I have a strong purpose to serve. I have a good understanding of police professionalism and accountability. I believe my experience that I bring to the board is I'm a critical thinker and a methodical in decision-making. I have a strong desire to keep our law enforcement profession credible by having uniform standards for all Alaska law enforcement. And again, accountability. Police departments need a system of internal checks and balances to make sure their personnel are following through with their duties properly and acting with integrity. So with that, Madam Chair, I'm available for any questions.
Thank you. I know I have three myself, but I try to get my committee members first if I can. Senator Myers has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chief Mercer, I got contacted by some law enforcement back in my community about some changes that the Police Standards Council just put out over the, I think it was about a month ago, a couple months ago, for public comment. And they were a little concerned about some of the changes coming, saying they were a little too restrictive. And I was just wondering if I could get your comments on some of that.
Senator Myers, thank you. That's through the chair. Senator Myers, thank you for the question. Yeah, there is several proposals that are being proposed through the APSC, and I think based on some of the national trends with police reform, some of these proposals would be beneficial, such as, you know, maybe ramping up our training requirements for police officers to be certified in the state of Alaska. To my knowledge, there really isn't an outline of required training other than what is required through the Public Safety Academy over in Sitka just to get your certification for graduating from a police academy, but also falls in line for your police certification or basic certification in the state of Alaska. There is other specific language that has been provided pertaining to de-escalation and how that might apply for training all personnel, all law enforcement officers, that would be beneficial, I think, especially to keep up with current trends of what we're experiencing out there when we're trying to serve the public. I hope I answered your question, Senator Myers.
Answer it well enough for now. Still digging into it, but thank you.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chief Mercer, always good to hear from you. Madam Chair, the question actually relates to the same proposed regulations that Senator Myers heard about. I've heard from chiefs of two very small Alaska police departments, both of whom thought the standards were good but had concerns about their training costs. Chief Mercer, can you talk to us about anything the Police Standards Council is considering that would help make this training available to departments without breaking their budgets?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, good to see you again. That was one of the concerns that I thought about when I looked at the proposals. When anytime there's a requirement put on departments, especially smaller municipalities, the concern is how are we going to fund this? We don't currently have maybe a large enough training budget. But having spoken with APSC director, I think the intent behind this is that the APSC would try to provide those required trainings and make it available statewide to agencies so that they're able to get it. And probably more likely think about logistically where to hold those specific types of trainings, like here in Juneau. I mean, a lot of times we'll hold training within the police department and extend it to our other partners within our region and invite them in to come to that specific training. But as far as I think it's a legitimate concern when it comes to if the APSC regulation proposal is that we're going to add this type of training, there should be some sort of fiscal note attached to it so that we could assure those smaller agencies that may not have the training funds to be able to get their people to that training, required training, so they can maintain their certification.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear that it's on the council's radar as something they're working on, too.
Excellent. And Chief Mercer, this is Senator Reinbold. I tend to ask some tough questions, but I actually don't think these are very hard. But anyway, first of all, I want to ask, did you support the passage of SB 91, the criminal law reform bill in 2016, and did you support the repeal publicly of SB 91?
Madam Chair, Senator Reinbold, on the onset of SB 91 and listening to it, I think there were some very favorable things because having been in law enforcement for over 25 years, we see the revolving door when it comes to dealing with the same individuals over and over. And a lot of times those individuals are suffering from mental illness or suffering from addiction. And, I think the general concept of SB 91 looked like maybe there's a possible avenue to help those individuals so that we don't have that reoccurring door dealing with the individual over and over and putting them into our criminal justice system. But as it progressed, I had more and more concerns with SB 91 because we didn't have things in place such as treatment facilities or diversionary courts to be able to address these issues. So a lot of these individuals that we were dealing with, they were We were dealing with them through our prosecutors, and they weren't going to jail, and they were back out in our communities reoffending and committing crimes and victimizing more and more people. So as we progressed along, I was not necessarily favorable for it. And to answer your second part, I believe I spoke at one hearing locally here about the repealing of it, and I felt it was necessary just because we didn't have everything in place for SB 91.
Okay, yeah, and I think that you know, SB 91 that's a very high level political answer, but there was a lot of pretty unbelievable things in that bill that created tremendous chaos across this state, in particular Anchorage and some other communities, because those people then just were headaches to our businesses, and they were headaches to our people, our homes, our cars were getting stolen in Anchorage like unbelievable levels. So it was more than just the lack of treatment options available. It was a very soft on crime bill. But anyway, good to know that you testified to repeal SB 91. That is good. In regards to the second question I have, uniform rules, the uniform standards, there are some bills that are Senator L.V. Gray Jackson she's definitely put forth. And basically, do you know anything about them, and are you supportive of some of those changes or not?
Senator Reibel, thank you for the question. I am familiar with some of them, and I will, in a broad brush approach, I'll tell you that some of them are absolute as far as, you know, banning chokeholds. SB 1, as I believe that's the bill that was proposed. However, you know, I think a lot of what is being proposed is already in many different departments' policies and procedures. For example, back in July of last year when we had the controversy of officer use of force, there was demands that was sent all over the country, including Alaska, wanting to ban or establish more police reform, and that was on there. I could tell you the department currently, that the Juneau Police Department, we don't allow chokeholds, but we do allow other types of carotid type holds that are used only when deadly force is justified. So as far as the bills go, I don't know if it necessarily needs to be established at that level. I think under maybe APSC regulations, and more importantly, under policy and procedure established within the police departments, that they manage that and regulate that, I think that should happen. As far as shooting from a moving vehicle, I mean, again, that's something that's prohibited within the Juneau Police Department. You're not allowed to do that unless just deadly force is justified. And there's a small window where that would fall into place. So I am familiar with some of these bills. Some of them, I think, are at a level of being regulated and managed at the department level through policies and procedure requirements is a must. And some of them being introduced and established within APSC regulations is also a must, and gives us as a state the ability to lean on some agencies that need to brush up on their policies and procedures.
Okay, thank you. That was helpful. And the last question, and I'm sorry for everyone on hold. These are really important appointments. This is the final question. And if you could just give the tightest answer you can, what do you think you need to help reduce crime more in the area?
I'm thinking, Senator Reibel. I mean, that's pretty broad. So, you know, obviously, we need personnel that are capable and trained to be able to do that. One of the things that, unfortunately, this state has moved away from, especially on the municipality level, is that when it comes to funding, sending our personnel to the Public Safety Academy, at one point there was funds established for that, and it covered municipal law enforcement personnel to go there. That's something that is put on now on the municipality to fund that. So on a budgetary side, that makes it sometimes problematic, and I could only imagine even for smaller police departments that could make it more harder. So you need the people to be able to go out and do the job. You need to sufficiently train. If there's going to be requirements for officers to go out and do their jobs, they have to be trained. If these requirements are going to be regulated either through state statute or through APSC regulations, there has to be funding for it. And as far as the criminal system goes, I mean, we just need very sound unity when it comes to dealing with habitual offenders within our community. As we through my time, I've seen a criminal who commits crimes over and over and has no intention of getting better, that they're brought into the criminal justice system, then they're back out on the street again. So maybe being a little bit more severe with habitual type offenders within our communities, because Juneau is no different than Anchorage and Fairbanks when we went through that with high property crime and all the different types of crimes that we saw rise over a period of time.
Okay, excellent. So, yeah, if you have any thoughts of any statutes potentially you think need to be changed or even ones you disagree with that you don't think need to be changed, I think the committee is very interested in hearing from you because we've got several bills before our committee, and I think it would be good if you weighed in. And I, in particular, think our number one issue is you know, public safety, trying to keep people safe in regards to crime and things like that out in the area. So if there's any specific thing beside the training, and I think you're referring to the trooper training in Sitka, is that correct?
That and then any sort of required training that maybe comes out of all this discussion as far as what is required of them to maintain certification.
Okay. Excellent. Because I'm asking DOC, I'm asking Department of Law, I'm asking the frontline troopers and APD and Juneau Police, what can we do to reduce crime? We still have awful statistics overall. So with that, thank you so much, Chief Mercer, for being with us today. We appreciate it. And it's your choice whether you want to hold the line or go ahead and get back to whatever you need to do today. But with that, thank you very much. We're going to go next to Joseph White. So, Joseph, if you could state your name, affiliation, and I know you're a chief of police for the city of Ketchikan. So, Chief, if you could just put all that on the record, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you want to serve on the police standards. Thank you.
Perfectly. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Joseph White. I'm currently the chief of police in Ketchikan. I've been with the city of Ketchikan for almost 25 years. I grew up in Alaska. Ketchikan and Kodiak, went to college in Anchorage and Fairbanks, graduated from Anchorage in 92. I have five children. I like spending as much time as I can with them, camping, fishing, and coaching. And I've been on this board since May of 2018. I think I bring good knowledge and sound judgment to this board. I like being part of making our profession the best we can for our citizens. And I think the Alaska Police Standards Council has a big role in that by making high standards for all law enforcement in Alaska. I think under today's current national climate that our communities deserve the best, and we need to strive to give them the best applicants, employees, and service that we can. And so with that, I'd be willing to have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, there's no questions from the other two senators there right now. I'm going to go ahead and ask the same questions. I think you heard them. Did you publicly support SB 91, and did you publicly support the repeal of SB 91? So we'll start there.
I did not publicly support it. When it came about, I tried to do the best we could with our department. By the time I came in as chief, I think we had just adopted it. That was one of the first trainings I brought in was a prosecutor to come down and help us weed through some of the language in it. It wasn't popular. I don't think it was overly effective, but we tried to do the best we could under the circumstances with the tools we had to work with. As far as publicly supporting the repeal, no, I didn't publicly support it, but I was very relieved when it was repealed so that we could be more effective to our communities. I do realize what Anchorage went through. Ketchikan didn't have quite the same issues like with the auto thefts, but we had a lot of property theft, a lot of property damage, and it was a very hard time for our citizens to understand why the system was ineffective.
And with that, I'm going to push just a little more. Why didn't you, knowing that it wasn't working, I mean, because I was playing with police departments across the state and chambers of commerce. I mean, I voted no. I tried to kill that bill for 3 months, and then I helped filibuster it for 4 days, and I made it my passion. I made a commitment that I was going to get that bill repealed, and it was brutal. But I'm just wondering, is there any reason why you guys didn't get involved publicly, knowing that that it wasn't popular amongst the police?
I honestly can't tell you why we did not publicly get involved with that at the time. I appreciate all the work you put into doing that. I cannot remember exactly why we didn't get out publicly. I believe we worked through the union reps here and got, you know, some of the union stuff behind it, but I don't, as administration, we did not do that at the time.
Okay, the last question I'm going to have, yeah, because I couldn't even get the union reps to help me. I gave them a little bit of pushback for that. But anyway, the last question, what do you need to help reduce crime in your area?
I believe that we need obviously to cooperate and work together as agencies. I think we do a fairly good job of that here on the island with the Alaska State Troopers. I think at times our district attorney's office is maybe overwhelmed. They take cases from Ketchikan, Prince of Wales, Metlakatla, Wrangell, and with having three in the prosecution's office, I think that sometimes they're overwhelmed. And maybe if we were to have a little bit bigger staff up there, maybe some of the cases that were sent up would have a better chance of making it to a good conclusion. I know with COVID, it's been very challenging for the office up there and the court system in general. So I think Chief Mercer kind of hit it right, too. I think that if you're going to have good prosecutable cases, you have to have highly trained officers. You have to have dedicated officers. So it kind of comes back to the hiring process and how many people we can actually get in here to test for openings. I can tell you that I'm trying to hire three officers, and I've got two applicants. So it's tough. So I know that we need to get the bodies on the street, but they need to be the right bodies, and they need to be properly trained. And then we have to have a prosecution that's favorable to what we need in our community.
Okay, well, Chief White, thank you very much for being with us today. I will, on behalf of the Judiciary Committee, say we are open to hearing suggestions because we answer to the people and we hear from the people. And so if you have suggestions on how we can help reduce crime, that would be great. And also, I am on the DPS subcommittee, so feel free to reach out to the subcommittee there in regards to training and trooper training. I'm not sure how much we could help there, but I think it's very valuable to hear the people on the street, and thanks for trying to keep us safe out there. So we're gonna go ahead and move on to the next candidate, which is Jennifer Winkleman. So Jennifer, I'm gonna personally apologize. I accidentally booked you last week when my staff was out, and there was a little bit of complications. So I thank you so much for your incredible patience. I have tremendous admiration for you, and please get your name. Your amazing resume, high level it, and tell us why you want to serve.
Great. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you so much, and not a problem on last week. I knew that it was crazy. So for the record, my name is Jennifer Winkleman. I am the Director of Pretrial Probation and Parole for the Department of Corrections. Brief personal introduction on me is I'm a fourth-generation Alaskan, born and raised in Fairbanks. My family relocated to Juneau in 2016 following a promotion with the Department of Corrections. I graduated from the University of Alaska Fairbanks with a degree in justice and paralegal studies. I have been with the Department of Corrections, both in the institution and the field, for just over 20 years. Took a little sabbatical after the birth of my first son, but a little over 20 years. I love the work. I'm passionate about what I do. I always say I have the best job in the world. I am married. My husband, Ron, also born and raised in Alaska, retired in 2016 after 30 years with the department. We have two beautiful children. We love to travel, do everything outdoors, especially on the water, or spend time with our family. To answer Senator Schauer's question that I've observed in several other hearings, I don't have a criminal history or any other surprises that would surface. Wanted to say that on the record. And why I would like to be able to be on the council and serve in this position, I do think it's an incredibly important to maintain professionalism and integrity within our law enforcement community. When I was appointed to be the director, I was presented with the opportunity to serve on this council as the correctional administrative officer position. I saw it as an honor and a privilege to hopefully continue to affect the well-being of others. I have experience managing offices from Ketchikan to Utagabek, so I recognize challenges that our vast state endures and yet appreciate the need to maintain a level of professionalism across the state. Being part of this council allows me a voice in ensuring that Alaska is operating under best practices when it comes to certification of our officers and training. And yet, on the other side of the coin, so to speak, service on the council also allows me to be part of helping restore faith in those who have lost it towards law enforcement when cases of misconduct are brought to our attention that we need to address. I believe in the work of peace officers, but I do believe it's imperative there's a check and balance system in place. I have served on the Police Standards Council for the last a little over 2 years, and the council lives by its mission and core services. I feel my experience and personality would continue to be an asset to the council. I have been fair and impartial in making decisions that impact both officers and communities. I consider facts and formulate decisions based on the big picture and ultimately the safety of our communities. Last year, of course, the field is ever evolving, and in law last year it was certainly amplified, but one thing remains steady, and that's the necessity to ensure that the state of Alaska has the most qualified law enforcement officers around. I thank you for your consideration and support, and I am available for questions.
Okay, excellent. I'm going to ask the same questions that I've asked in the past, and even if you wanted to say it from the Department of Corrections, basically, were you publicly involved in the supporting of SB 91, and were you publicly supportive of the repeal?
Madam Chair, I was not publicly supportive of SB 91. Yes, Madam Chair, I was very active in HB 49 and the repeal.
I remember that. Senator Myers.
Yes, thank you, Deputy Commissioner. So my question for you is, I understand that the Department of Corrections has also had an issue hiring and retaining corrections officers, and I'm just curious what you see your role is on the Police Standards Council in interacting with that and making it harder or easier to fill some of those vacancies over there in terms of the standards that you put in place that may end up being barriers for hiring corrections officers.
Through the chair to Senator Myers, that is actually something that is near and dear to my heart to, as a correctional representative on the council, is to make sure that I have a voice. And I would say that the hiring of correctional officers, the recruitment and the retention of correctional officers is parallel to what we are seeing with probation and parole officers and, of course, law enforcement officers through other agencies. And so it is very important to make sure that we are considering, as we talked about earlier, and I believe during Chief Mercer's testimony with regard to the regulations package in front of us, that we are considering all avenues of certified officers to ensure that we aren't putting any unnecessary barriers out there.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and then Director Winkleman, first of all, I enjoy working with you very much. I want you to know that. And I'm going to just put something. I don't know if you want to be put on the spot right now, but I will tell you, I'm getting more and more pressure from my community. We do have a correctional facility in my community, Highland, and I'm also getting people that want the prisons to be open to visit family members right now. I don't know if you're comfortable stating that, but I do believe it can help in the healing process. And are you comfortable commenting on that or not? I've tried to work a little bit behind the scenes with the commissioner, but you know, at some point, you know, it just seems like these people deserve to see their families.
So, Madam Chair, what I would say, I enjoy working with you as well, and I thank you for that sentiment. And then with regard to what we are doing, I know we are actively, we have been in meetings actively working on our reopening plan. While it's a little bit out of my wheelhouse, meaning because I deal with the field side of the operations, I can't speak to where we're at in it, but I do know that we have been in several meetings and definitely can say that respect your thought as well with regard to the importance of visitation and such with folks being able to, you know, speak to family, et cetera.
Okay, thank you very much, Director Winkleman. And with that, thank you for being with us today. You're free to stay or get back to your duties. I think these are fascinating testimonies, so feel free. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Next, we are going to, I don't see the next one on the online yet, so we are going to go to my area. So, Chief Justin Dahl, welcome to the Judiciary Committee today, and I know you're the Chief of Police for Anchorage, and if you could, I think you know the drill. You've been holding on for quite a while now, and thank you for being with the Senate Judiciary today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. Again, my name is Justin Dahl. I am the Chief of Police here in Anchorage. I've been with APD for over 24 years, and I've been chief for about the last 4 years. I've been serving on the council for the last several years. I think this is my second appointment. I've really enjoyed my time on the council. I think it's really important for law enforcement executives to have a voice when it comes to upholding the standards for law enforcement officers across the state. And I think that that's more important now than it's ever been, as law enforcement across the country faces some pretty interesting challenges and transformations to the profession. And I've really enjoyed being a part of that for the last few years as part of the council, so I'm looking forward to continuing to serve. Just a little bit about me personally. I grew up in Anchorage, went to high school here, went to college a couple times here, and my wife, Monique, and I live here. We've been married for about 21 years. So it's been a great time working for APD and being part of the community here in Anchorage. I'm just looking forward to continuing to serve with the council, and I would be happy to answer questions.
Senator Myers.
Thank you, Chief Dahl. I want to repeat a question I asked earlier. In regards to the new standards that you just published a couple of months ago and some of the controversies surrounding them, I was just wondering if I could hear your thoughts and comments.
Sure. Thank you, Senator Myers, through the chair. I am familiar with some of those. I don't know that I'd say I know every single one. I think there might be a couple that I haven't seen yet. But for the most part, the ones that look at sort of the conduct and operations of law enforcement officers in the state, they largely mirror what the Anchorage Police Department already does. So I don't have any specific concerns with regards to our operations. But I would just echo something that Chief Mercer said. I think he pointed out quite well that there are, I think, concerns for some smaller agencies at the cost associated with training officers to different standards, developing policies, keeping track of use of force data, reporting use of force data. I don't know that the other chiefs that I've talked to necessarily have philosophical objections to those things. I think they're more concerned with their individual agencies and how they will be able to keep up with those requirements, and that's something I can totally understand. I know that as a council member, the council is always looking at our ability to train the agencies and the officers around the state, and the financial allocation to the council has been declining in recent years, which makes training a little bit more challenging. I think it was Chief White that mentioned, or maybe it was Chief Mercer, that the council used to provide some funding for some of the smaller municipalities to send their officers to the Trooper Academy in Sitka. We had to stop that a few years ago because there just wasn't enough money to do that anymore. So I would just encourage the legislature, as you consider some of these things moving forward, to take that into account, what the cost would be to the agencies that will be subject to those regulations as they move through the legislature in bill form. And as we publish them as potential regulations from the council, that's something that we're very cognizant of, and we want to make sure that we're not placing some impossible burden on an agency that's relatively small. I think Alaska is very unique And that's actually been one of the things I've been most interested in through my service on the council, is learning about the challenges in rural Alaska, you know, agencies with just a few officers, how they function, what the challenges are to recruit and hire officers for those areas and then get them trained. You know, for me to send someone to training, one officer out of 450, you know, not too much of a challenge. If you only have three officers in your department and you send one to training, you lose 33% of your staffing. So I think just very different challenges to keep in mind. And hopefully I answered your question, Terry. If I did not, please let me know, and I'll readdress the points that I missed.
That sounds good. Thank you.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chief Dahl, I may have misheard you, but did you say you were not familiar with all the regulations that the Police Standards Council had put out for comment in the comment period just closed last month?
No. In fact, if I did say that, what I meant was I'm not familiar with all the bills, I think, that are currently circulating through the legislature. I've seen some of those, but I am familiar with the regulations that the council put out. So I apologize if I said it backwards.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chief, thank you very much for clarifying that. It puts my mind right at ease. I did have one other question, if I may. Chief Dahl, recent news reports suggested that you were looking for employment outside. How confident can the legislature be that you plan to serve the full term?
Well, I'll be honest. I plan on retiring from the Anchorage Police Department in June. So I think that I probably will not serve my full term. I have made that clear to the governor's office, and they asked me to proceed with the nomination process, and so here I am.
Thank you.
Okay, and Chief Dahl, because you're from my area, I'm going to drill down a little bit, but the end will be good. But I want to first of all just ask you, because Anchorage fell apart. I mean, it was unbelievable, and I pleaded with people to help me with the SB 91 to stop it from getting passed, and I was very disappointed that it got passed, and then obviously the repeal. I want to know, did you publicly support the bill or the repeal?
No, I was not involved with either one.
Is there a reason?
Well, I was not chief when SB 91 was going through, and I was chief when the repeal was going through, but generally it's been my policy as a chief to try to remain apolitical and not get involved in those kinds of discussions. We did provide a lot of information, especially to the legislature as it was considering different bills and the repeal, just about the types of activity that Anchorage was seeing, what the police department was doing as a result. But I generally try not to advocate one way or the other for different pieces of legislation as a police chief.
Okay, well, I'll tell you, I'll just be straight up with you. It was very disappointing because I did do ride-alongs with the police department, and I met with as many police that would talk to me on the streets during that time, and I met with quite a few, and every single one of them really had a hard time. So I think as chief, it is your duty and responsibility to fight for the people. There were serious morale issues. It was rough. I was talking to a lot of them. And so I will tell you, I needed to get that on the record. And I will tell you that when I did run for a senator, it was my number one goal is to repeal SB 91. I had made a commitment to the people that I was going to get that bill repealed. And it took a solid 3 years, but it was tough. But I think things are doing better with the SB 91 repeal. My next question to you is, what can we do to help continue to drive down crime? I mean, crime is still quite high in Anchorage, so we need some help here.
Well, I think that's a good question. Thank you for that, Senator. You know, I think that we've had some recent success the last 2 years. We just released sort of our look back at 2020. Homicides are down by about 50% compared to 2017. Property crime, the major categories of property crime like burglary, stolen vehicles, things like that are down by about 40%. So we definitely want to stay on this track. I think nobody wants that more than I do, to see us continue to push in that direction. So I can say for Anchorage specifically, we really appreciate the support that the police department has received over the last few years and being able to add lots of new officers and new programs. I just hope to see that continue as we work through the next couple of years. And I would hope that as the rest of the state is sort of looking at how to support that, we would see the parallel support for our partner agencies like Department of Corrections, Department of Law, and the District Attorney's Office, And then, you know, all of the downstream, you know, law enforcement, as everyone knows, is sort of the first place that someone has contact when they're having some sort of behavioral issue. But there are lots of other people downstream that end up interacting with that person and just making sure that the support is there for that, whether it's substance abuse, behavioral health, all those different components that can work together to get that person to where they're not creating issues for the rest of the community. So we just appreciate that support and hope to see it continue.
Well, Chief, if you're interested, I know you have, you stated 24 years, I believe it was, and 4 years as chief. If you do any sort of an exit interview, it'd sure be nice if you get a report to the legislature, even, you know, local legislators, on what we can do to help drive crime down and keep Anchorage safer. That would be of great appreciation. And I'm going to make a personal comment right now that I have to say I am very appreciative that you guys stood back some in some of this mandates that never really went through the legislature. And I believe that a lot of the Anchorage Police Department realized their oath to the Constitution and held back and saw some constitutional violations. And I have to say I've been quite pleased with the Anchorage Police Department overall and a lot of the chaos that happened the last year. And so hats off to you.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And next we will go to Greg Scott Campbell. With that, thank you so much for being with us today, and thank you for your patience. This is taking a little bit longer than what we anticipated today. So with that, I wanted to welcome you to our committee. It looks like you've got quite an amazing resume before you. So if you want to highlight your resume, that would be terrific, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. Please excuse me if my voice is a little weak. I've just recovered from COVID, so I'm not feeling all that great. I've been a resident of Alaska since 1969. I was an Alaska State Trooper for a dozen years or so as a sergeant, and then I went with the North Slope Borough Police Department and retired from there as the chief of police. I'm married. I have two sons and 10 grandchildren, and we all live in the Palmer area. I was a previous member of the Alaska Police Standards Council, and my interest is maybe a little bit different from the chiefs that I've listened to. I have a strong interest in making the integrity and the responsibility and the standards for rural law enforcement more powerful. With that, Madam Chairman, I'm certainly open to questions.
It looks like there's nobody raising their hand on the committee. You've heard my questions. Yes or no, were you involved in helping, you know, support SB 91, and were you involved in helping repeal SB 91?
Madam Chairman, I was not in an official law enforcement capacity at that time. I did speak with a number of friends of mine, district attorneys and assistant district attorneys, and gained the opinion that this SB 91, although maybe coming from a good place as a cost-saving measure, was actually turned out to be a disaster, and I strongly supported the repeal of SB 91.
Good to know. And I'm going to ask the question I've been asking others, as you know, what can we do to help reduce crime? There's quite a bit of drug crime up in that area, I know in the valley. So what do you need to do a better job to reduce crime?
Well, I'm not real sure about that, kind of getting back into this after a number of years. I have kept my interest up, and I always believe that any police department or law enforcement agency who has the resources to do training and more training is probably the answer to maintaining our professionalism. I believe the state of Alaska as a whole law enforcement agencies have an excellent reputation nationwide. I've attended many nationwide courses of study, and our reputation is not exceeded by any state, and I certainly would like to maintain that.
Okay, because I thank you for that, but it's just a lot of people ask us, how can we reduce crime? And because we get to hear or have to hear the stories, you know, we don't know, is it the law? We tried to strengthen the law, or is it the resources on the front line? Is it the arrest process? Is it in the courts? Is it, you know, the convictions? Is it, you know, part of Department of Law? And then once they get into Department of Corrections, I mean, how do we make sure that, you know, they're going to be very motivated to not reoffend? So if you find weaknesses in this, it's always the weakest link. I'm trying to figure out where's the weakest link in our criminal justice system right now. I have some ideas, but I always think it's better to work with people on the front line. So we, as the Judiciary Committee, and I believe even beyond in some of our subcommittees on finance, we're interested in hearing from you guys. And with that, I'm going to see if there's any final questions from people here. Looks like you are good. Thank you, and we wish you well, and thank you for being with the Senate Judiciary Committee today.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Okay, the last person, and thank you tremendously for your patience today. We have a Kodiak. It looks like you were in Kodiak and then Glen Allen, then Department of Public Safety in Sitka, and then AST Ketchikan Post, Soldotna, and now also the Department of Public Safety in Sitka you were part of. So with that, Shane Nicholson, I believe, are you a sergeant right now? Post supervisor?
Yes, Chair, I am.
Okay.
My name's Shane Nicholson.
Excellent. Please proceed.
Well, thank you, ma'am. So I'm a 21-plus-year law enforcement officer. Been with the state of Alaska since 1994 as a technician with Fish and Game. I grew up in Kodiak. I have been fortunate enough to live interior Alaska, southeast Alaska, south central Alaska, and after 24 years, I graduated from Kodiak in 1992, bounced around the state, and was fortunate enough to take a sergeant position here with the wildlife troopers back in 2014, and been here ever since. I have a wife and two kids that one's a freshman in college and one's a senior in high school. That it's been interesting times for all of us with the whole COVID and the lack of graduations, but hey, we're all getting through this together, so. But thank you very much for your time, and I'm open for questions, Madam Chair.
Okay, well, excellent. We all want to know why you want to serve on the board, but then if you could also answer my questions about were you publicly involved in supporting SB 91 and the repeal, that would be great.
So I feel strongly about the standards we as law enforcement officers are held to within the state of Alaska, and I want to continue to be part of the council that helps uphold those standards. I'm also an instructor and have been an instructor with the Department of Public Safety. I was down in Sitka as a corporal and as a sergeant down there. So I feel very strongly about the training that we give our law enforcement officers, both state and municipal. I was fortunate enough to be part of quite a few classes down there between 2006 and 2010. And I really appreciate the opportunity to help hold that standard and make sure that those standards are followed, not only from an instructor standpoint, but also being part of the council.
Thank you. And then the SB 91?
So, ma'am, I was, as I've been for quite a few years, sergeant at the time, I was definitely not, I shouldn't say definitely not, I was not actively against SB 91 or for SB 91 as a road sergeant. I was doing what I was told to do. Did it make our job more difficult at times, SB 91? It did. It did put some more restriction on us, and it we also saw that we were interacting with folks that would normally be put into the system after we had caught them with whatever criminal activity, and we found that we were dealing with them more regularly, on a more regular basis, and I was not actively, I was not vocal about the repeal of SB 91, but I've been very pleased with the repeal of it.
Okay. So, obviously, you know how I feel in regards to that. That was a real heavy lift when the chamber wouldn't get involved hardly at all, and the unions wouldn't get involved. I mean, I pleaded with so many people, and it was tough. But I'll tell you, three people on this committee, Senator Hughes, I know, had voted for SB 91, but she worked on the repeal, and Senator Showers and I and Senator McChicky, we worked real, real hard on that. So you definitely, I'm happy that you're happy that it was repealed. Last question from me is, what can we do to reduce crime?
Madam Chair, as you are aware, with the size of the state of Alaska and us as, you know, state, let's just take state troopers, for example, we are very thin in numbers throughout the majority of the state, where one trooper may be in charge of four or five villages. That's the difficult part for us. We're very fortunate to still have VPSOs at this time. We do have VPOs in certain communities as well. But I think as a state trooper, especially in rural Alaska, that is the hardest. That is the hardest thing for us to get by. The manning, just the actual law enforcement bodies in these rural communities are few and far between. So be honest with you, in a lot of these smaller communities, we're more reactionary. We have to be. We're spread so thin.
Okay, and with that, thank you very much. I can vouch for that. I did a ride-along with Trooper 2. It was unbelievable. I do not know how some of them do their job, and I was just amazed. They definitely needed some more reinforcements. We have worked on that budget considerably, and I've heard things are improving. I know raises went into place, and so I'm hoping, you know, some of the investment that we have made and with new tools that things are getting better, but I will tell you, I personally am very interested. I know my district is, and we definitely do a lot of recreating out where the troopers are, and we do appreciate you very much. So with that, I want to thank you so much for serving Alaska and for being out there, we enjoyed getting to know you a little bit today. So with that, thank you for being with the Senate Judiciary Committee today.
Thank you, Madam Chair and community members.
Okay, so we are going to just take a very, very brief at ease. Okay, back on the record, I was just reminded about public testimony. I was jumping ahead a little bit. So right now we're going to go ahead and see if there's any public testimony in the room for the Alaska Police Standards appointees. Does not look like it. I do not see anybody online for that, so I'm going to go ahead and end public testimony. And with that, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move that we forward these names to the joint session, so let me read the motion here. In accordance with Alaska Statute 3905080, I move that the committee forward the names of Ed Mercer, Joseph White, Jennifer Winkleman, Daniel Weatherly, Justin Dahl, Gregory Scott Campbell, and Larry Nicholson to the joint session for consideration.
Okay, and with that, Daniel Weatherby, just as a note, we may put at a later time, but with that, with no objections, we're going to take a brief at ease to sign some paperwork. First of all, I'm going to say I'd like to remind members that signing the reports regarding the appointees to the boards and commission in no way reflects the individual's members or approval or disapproval with the appointees. The nominations are forwarded to the full legislature for confirmation or rejection. Okay. So with that, we get to move to our next order of business today, which is introduction of SB 65. And with that, we have a member of the Judiciary Committee, Senator Keel and CJ. And so with that, you know the process. So the floor is yours.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jesse Keel, and I have the privilege of representing Senate District Q. With me today is the intern in my office, CJ Harrell, through the Ted Stevens Institute and the University of Alaska Southeast. And with your permission, Madam Chair, I'll turn the microphone to Ms. Harrell to introduce the bill.
Absolutely. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is CJ Harrell. I work for Senator Keel as an intern. Within Alaska and other states, healthcare providers will seek the knowledge and expertise of fellow medical professionals to help them seek the knowledge, expertise of fellow medical professionals to help them understand how to help their patient in an effective and timely manner. These conversations may be an official consultation, but often medical professionals have what are called curbside consultations. This is when a patient's healthcare provider has an uncompensated, informal consultation with another medical professional. These consulting medical professionals are often specialists and do not have any relationship with the patient being discussed. It is a fast and effective way of sharing knowledge and expertise, and in many ways is the backbone of medical care. It was not until 2 years ago in Minnesota that a healthcare provider who had no relationship to a patient was forced to defend themselves against a civil liability case. We fear that by not protecting those who have no relationship to a patient and are sharing their expertise through a curbside consultation, they will no longer feel comfortable aiding fellow healthcare providers in this way. This bill will allow curbside consultations to continue, but now without the fear of becoming subject to civil liability for a patient who they have no relationship to. Thank you.
Senator Keel, do you have anything to add?
Thank you, Madam Chair. In consideration in the Health and Social Services Committee, there were two changes to the bill, one of which simply clarified an unclear statement about preparing a report, and the other added chiropractors to the list of professionals who may give and receive curbside consultations without the risk of liability under the bill. As this is the Judiciary Committee, I think it's worth talking in just ever so slightly more detail about the legal principles. The Minnesota State Supreme Court case that Ms. Harrell referred to really set out a brand new standard for medical liability, one that did not require a doctor-patient relationship, and therefore did not require a duty of care, which is really one of the keystones of liability and torts. So the purpose of SB 65 is to preserve, in essence, the way that duty, or rather the way that medical malpractice liability has worked in Alaska and virtually every other state, and not to hold potentially liable a healthcare professional who has never treated the patient, laid hands on the patient, taken payment in conjunction with the patient, doesn't practice with the people who do as part of the same medical practice. There's a series of other criteria in the bill, and we'd be happy to discuss them in as much detail as the committee can stomach. But that, Madam Chair, is really the key to the legal issue behind Senate Bill 65. Thank you.
Okay, and I had the opportunity to hear this bill in Hess. So when you say no laying on the hands and stuff, that includes vaccinations. It's a different story once they administer a vaccine, correct?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Any healthcare professional who gives you a shot, has laid hands on you, has a duty of care to you, would not be covered by Senate Bill 65.
Excellent. Very important for me. Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One nice thing about us having a bit of a sparse committee right now is I don't have to share. So as I was going through this bill, I've got four questions that I wanted to ask, and with your permission, I'll just roll through them.
Please. Yes.
All right. So first of all, line 9, you mentioned as part of the criteria here, the patient is not a current or former patient of the consulting healthcare provider. And I'm curious why you wouldn't allow a former patient of the provider to also knock out the liability there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In answer to Senator Myers' question, if a doctor treated someone last week, they have a doctor-patient relationship.
Okay. It's just a question of what defines former and what defines current, I suppose. And if I as a medical professional haven't seen somebody in 3 or 4 years, it would seem to me that the doctor-patient relationship would no longer be there. Brings up an interesting thought process. Second, on the following page, on page 20, or excuse me, line 23, as we run through the definitions of healthcare facility, one thing that I noticed was missing is we talked about it. The bill talks about a private, municipal, or state hospital, but it doesn't mention a federal hospital. And my thought is the VA, other military hospitals around the state. I'm curious if that was an oversight or if there is other legal standards that already apply that make this bill not applicable.
Madam Chair, in answer to Senator Myers' question, was not the intent to exclude federal hospitals from the definition of a healthcare facility. I will research that and get back to the committee with a more definitive answer about the specific language.
Excellent. Senator Myers.
All right. Next one going down the line. On the final page, the very last line there, I was surprised to see pharmacist listed. The difference that I see between pharmacists and other healthcare providers is that a pharmacist isn't somebody that one generally enters into the same type of relationship that one would enter into with a doctor or a nurse, something along those lines. And so I'm not necessarily saying that we need to pull pharmacists out of this bill, but it would just striking to me to see the that it was included, and I'm just curious as to the thought process there.
Thank you. If I may, Madam Chair, in answer to Senator Myers' question, that was done in a previous version of this bill last year, in a previous legislature, and it is different. I think you're exactly right. The pharmacists were included because of the frequency with which other medical providers will call them and consult about what is the best medication to prescribe for a given situation. And I think it's worth pointing out that the way Senate Bill 65 is written, it always has to apply the treating medical professional, I should say, has to be treating within their scope of practice. So a pharmacist in the rare instance that they might call someone else for advice, really can only act within the pharmacist's own scope of practice. Likewise, a pharmacist who gives advice to an MD, that MD is the treating medical professional. That MD is the one who maintains the liability should something go wrong for the patient. And as long as that MD is operating within their own scope of practice, which does include, of course, in that your hypothetical, the ability to prescribe. But the frequency and the necessity for those with prescribing powers to be able to call a pharmacist and say, you know, I have a 57-year-old male with a very high body mass index, and I'm looking at this list of conditions. Is drug X contraindicated? And just get that advice is that's so important to the way we provide health care that the legislature last year thought that it was very valuable to include them in the bill.
Fair enough. And then
Senator Myers.
Chair, one final question, and this one we may need to call the Department of Law rather than the sponsor. I was just looking at the fiscal note here, and on the language section of the fiscal note, the analysis, I noted that it said immunity may apply rather than immunity does or shall or will apply. And it seems to me that the point of the bill is to come up with a will or shall, not a may. And that seemed a little concerning to me. I'm not sure if that actually does conform to what the bill does or if that was a mistake made by the Department of Law. Both of those would be surprising to me.
Madam Chair, in reviewing the language of the fiscal note, I think the bill makes clear that that very long sentence with all the dependent clauses it lays out the situations to which immunity applies. So I would agree with Senator Myers' interpretation there that the bill is not designed to possibly set out civil immunity in those situations, but to create civil immunity in those situations.
Senator Myers?
Fair enough for me. Thank you very much.
Okay, excellent. So with that, do you have any final thoughts, CJ or Senator? No?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, so what I would like to do, and you can either stay there, we're just about to gavel out. So what I want to say is we're going to put this bill aside right now, but of course it's going to come up again. And I'd like to work with you on invited testimony, public testimony, amendments, and all that. I'm not going to put anything on the record today. I usually don't like to do that the first day that it's introduced, especially when a couple members are in other places right now. But I would like y'all to know that we are going to be meeting Wednesday, and we're at March 10th at 1:30, and we're planning on hearing bills previously heard. Not sure, you know, I'll get with you guys. And also governor's appointees, we're going to continue because we've got quite a few backed up. I think we've had 160 calls or something like that in our office over the last month. So it's a lot of people that we're trying to get on the docket. So we're going to have to put quite a bit of time working with governor's appointees. And with that, thank you very much for presenting. I think this is a fascinating bill, and it's an important topic. So with that, we're going to go ahead and gavel out at 2:40.